songs to listen to, time to spin. Up ahead, the road is bending. Wonder what's around the bend.
Here's where we're headed. Listen to the names of America. Sharon, Pennsylvania. Grand Rapids, Michigan. Lindenville, Vermont. Buffalo, South Carolina. Wahoo, Nebraska. You wouldn't want to miss a trip like that, would you? We'll have you back home in half an hour.
Wanna see what's on the other side of the mountaintop? Rainbows in, I can see the road is bending. Wonder what's around the bend.
You know, a shoe store. Oh no. That's the playing field of a champion. Here he comes now, out of the bullpen, the hottest pitcher in the retail shoe game today. Big number one, Larry Jolton.
11C, coming up, coming up.
I wouldn't go any bigger than that.
That's a nice ratio, 20% off.
Like the light better.
I did too.
Especially in the summertime, listen to me. You order the two shoes, whatever color you want. If it comes in, it don't fit, if you don't like it, you're not able to get it fixed.
Big day, clean it up.
Larry Jolton is the Cy Young of his time, the best of the big league shoe pitchers. There are only 38,000 feet in Sharon, Pennsylvania. Last year, Larry Jolton sold $423,000 worth of shoes.
It's going to be busy today, fellas. I can feel it. I can feel it. It's going to be busy.
His stats make him the MVP, the officially recognized champion shoe salesman.
That's not bad, nobody. Yeah.
He's got it all. Fastball, curveball, sinker, slider. He can pitch inside, outside, down the middle, 8Cs, 11 triple E's, wingtips, loafers, boots, and moccasins.
Love it, I love it.
Now he's got his rhythm. Now he's throwing strikes.
It's getting wild, getting wild.
Just watch.
Have a seat. Take care of you. Sorry, like to have a seat? And we'll get you right now. And everybody's shoes.
Hey, we're hot today. Got both of them. Got both of them.
Larry Jolton's rule number one. If you're standing still, you're not selling shoes. It was drive that made him the hottest pitcher in shoes today.
I just wanted to be the best. You know, like goes back to my days in Brooklyn when I used to go down to the playground and play ball. Well, we weren't getting no money for it. We were playing for nothing. Yet you had to win. It was so important to win that game just to feel good about yourself. Well, I apply the same thing to sell shoes. It's like a fire burning in me. You know, it never goes out. You just got to do the best job possible. Run tight, I'll try a 10 on.
Of course, the inner fire. Every champion has it. But what makes Larry Jolton a shoe-in for the Shoe Retailers Hall of Fame is the little something extra he puts on every pitch.
You ever helped that shoe?
Did I? See? Nothing to it.
Well, why don't you get one?
I think maybe you need a black pair to go with it, baby.
Your shoes didn't come in yet. The minute it comes in, I promise I'll take it right to your house.
I'll personally deliver shoes to people's houses. I'll deliver shoes to restaurants. I'll deliver shoes. Someone might call me up, Larry, I can't get down there. I need a pair of shoes for a wedding. You do me a favor and drop a pair of shoes off for me. I'll say, sure. Anything for sale. Anything for sale, I'll do.
On fire, heck. On fire. Look
out. He stays loose. He has all the moves. What else?
Especially when you're busy, people get annoyed by waiting too long for shoes. So a good salesman should know where all the stock is. You've got to get that shoe on their foot fast. This place gets so wild, it gets so busy, and really, you have to sometimes run on four or five people to keep people satisfied. There's one thing we don't want. We don't want people walking out without shoes. And if I can help it.
Let me try it on.
Try it on. It's a good shoe.
But an athlete can drive himself right into the ground. Larry Jolton knows that. That's why he always takes time for a good lunch. You have to keep up your strength because sometimes the game goes into extra innings.
You get people who just don't know the size. They come in and there's one fellow in particular I remember. He came in and he says, I'd like to have a pair of black shoes. I said, anything in particular, sir? He says, just a pair of black shoes. So I says, what size do you wear? Can I measure your foot? No, no, you can't measure my foot. I wear an 8.5D. So I bring out about 2 or 3 black shoes. I put them on his feet. And then he says to me, oh, easy on my toes. My toes are sore. So I says to him, how long your toes been sore? He says to me, I believe say 3 months, maybe 2 months. He says to me, 12 years. So I says to him, when was the last time you had a foot measured? He says, about 14 years ago. I said, please, let me measure your foot. So he starts yelling at me. He says, listen, sonny, nobody's going to measure my feet. I'm wearing 8.5D. I said, sir, I tried on 3 pairs of shoes already. They're all tight on you, and they all hurt your toes. Let me measure your foot. See, there's time in the shoe business. A good salesman, if you think you're a good salesman or you try to be a good salesman, you got to take charge. I mean, you can be the nice guy and you can be funny, but you got to take charge. And you got to say, listen, you want to get a correct fit? Let me measure your foot. So he's finally agreed to it, and I measure his foot, and believe it or not, the man wore a 10B. 3 sizes too small. I didn't tell him what size he wore because I knew he never let me come out with the shoe. So I just went back to the stockroom. I walked out with a black 10B, and he puts on a shoe. He gets up and goes like this. He goes, what did you do to the shoe? My toes don't hurt anymore.
This is Larry Jolton's motto. If the shoe fits, sell it.
Don't mind my size, mind about the fit.
I wouldn't go any bigger than that. You got a very narrow foot.
I came on a sale day today. 20% off, so you came at the right time. Busy place.
And when the day is done, there are the great moments, the shutouts, to look back on.
Have a nice weekend. Ladies, have fun at the party. I had about 2-3 days this year. I did between 5,000 and 6,000 in one day. It was just booming here.
Did he sell me a pair of shoes? Well, I was a little short of cash. So he took a credit card. Nobody walks away from the champ without a pair of shoes. House, this is a treasure house of snake oils and cure-alls and ancient tonics. The Williams Company of Grand Rapids, Michigan, which keeps the rural pharmacies and country stores stocked with the patent medicines people want and need. These are the elixirs Grandpa swore by, still doing their healing work today. Dr. J.H. McLean's volcanic oil liniment for man or beast has stood the test of time, probably because it's so good for so many things: overexertion, fatigue, mosquito bites, stiff neck due to drafts, and a convenient home liniment for livestock since 1841. A number of other doctors have made their mark. Dr. Drake, Dr. Hubbard, Dr. Tischner, and Dr. Pierce with his golden medical discovery, active ingredients gentian root, grape root, and blood root, aids digestion. Dr. McLean couldn't resist putting his own picture on this bottle of his tarwine compound. And Dr. S. Andrel Kilmer, similarly, good-looking fellow, pictured himself on his swamp root, aids the kidneys in their necessary work. Hamlin's wizard oil survives. That's Hamlin. Some otherwise anonymous people of the 19th century survive into our time on the labels of these old medicines. Percy's medicine has a picture of baby Percy. And since 1878, Grandpa's Wonder Pine Tar Soap has carried a picture of Grandpa. For many a year, many a family has sworn by Interclean Herbal Laxative, but none is genuine without this signature, Arnold Errett. There was a time when hardly anything went on a drugstore shelf without a man's signature on it. Since 1810, Edward Pino's own signature has appeared on his Eau de Quinine. Andy Payne, a medicine cabinet in a jar, carries the rather elegant signature of D.D. Williams, always has carried it. And no Barry's Trisophorus box has ever gone on the shelf without the signature of A.C. Barry, the originator. Speaking of Barry's Trisophorus, a lot of products have lasted down the decades in spite of or because of perfectly gaudy, hard-to-pronounce names. Glycerated Asafoetida, Oxycristine, Glycothymoline,
balsam of myrrh. And Guadalupano, Belladonna, and Capsicum Porous Plaster, with a four-color picture of Our Lady of Guadalupe right there on every package. Beautiful labels may account for the longevity of some of these things. This is probably the most beautiful of all. So intricate that really you can't even read the name of the product. The name of the product is Florida Water. They make it in New Jersey. They've all been popular for generations. BQR, SSS, BGO, 666, and WDS, Wonderful Dream Brand Salve. FATGO, that's to take pounds off, of course. Wait on, that's to put them on again. An amazing number of these products are designed to keep your teeth in. Rigident, Super Hold, Dent Lock, and Clutch. None of the products advertise that they make your teeth fall out, and presumably none of them do. Elsewhere, I know they are splicing genes in the laboratory and patenting miracle drugs. But most people don't need their genes spliced, and they don't want to fool around with the unknown. What they want is something tried and true and good for what ails you. From all these cures and elixirs, let me choose just one example to show you what I mean. This is Bag Balm. Comes in a pretty green can. Has been a heavy seller for most of the years of the century. And what is Bag Balm good for?
It is good for every sore. It is good for every cut.
It's the greatest thing for diaper rash there ever was.
It is one of the greatest healers. Just smell of it. Just the odor is magnificent.
It's easy out here in the country to find testimonials for Bag Balm. Those are some we heard. Here is another. Bag Balm was invented, you see, and is still marketed as a soothing preparation for the chapped udders of cows.
This is a product, Bag Balm, that I use on my cows for chapped tits in the summertime due to sunburn. And also, if they've got minor cuts and scrapes, it puts an antiseptic over the cow's tit.
But one good use deserves another. People use it on themselves now, to the great satisfaction of its maker, John Norris, born and brought up and still at home in Lindenville, Vermont.
Bag Balm was started in 1910 by my father. He bought the formula from a druggist in Woodsville and continued until I took over in 1934, and we've maintained the same formula and the same design of the can until the present time.
The company has grown and grown until now it has four employees. They mix the lanolin and antiseptic and pine oil in the same proportions as first prescribed 73 years ago. And they fill 400,000 cans of Bag Balm every year to meet the nation's demand. But how did it come to pass that human beings use Bag Balm?
This was started, I believe, that years ago, farmers' wives used to do a lot of milking. And they'd put Bag Balm on their hands to rub on the cow's udder. And they'd find out then how soft their hands stayed. So Bag Balm went from the barn into the house.
Now you can find it in as many medicine cabinets as cow barns, that ubiquitous, gaudy green can.
Can you find the before I was born? Well, I think it was a pretty good artist. The front of the can shows a cow's udder, which is the primary purpose of Bag Balm. The cover on the can shows the red clover leaf and the cow's head, which is a very distinctive design and as much a part of Bag Balm as the ointment itself.
The ointment is used for just about everything, as documented in John Norris's company files, for itches, scratches, scrapes, and rashes.
Frostbite, chapped lips, for sunburn.
For lubricating wagon wheels and waterproofing boots.
I had a friend that said when his false teeth hurt him, he used Bag Balm underneath to take the soreness out.
It is also excellent, wrote a woman in Maine, for stopping her bed springs from squeaking. Business has never been better, John Norris says, but he has one worry.
Well, the future of the bag bond is a $64 question. Maybe my daughter will come up and run it, I don't know. If not, I'm going to have to make some other arrangements. But what I'm very careful about, whoever does it, I hope they'll try to maintain the same standards that my father and I have tried to maintain for, you know, pretty near 75 years.
So John Norris continues to test every batch of bag balm personally to assure that it never changes. He is thinking of all the customers out there who depend on him. There is the mill town of Buffalo, South Carolina, population 1,641. Up here on the hill lives a woman who feels a kind of responsibility for the other 1,640. Agatha Burgess is a widow lady, as they say, who spends her day in the kitchen all day. She's up every morning cooking at 5 o'clock.
I hit the floor and I come in here and I start working. I've got everything ready to go.
Her corn muffins have been well known to the town for more than 15 years. After she puts the muffins in the oven and checks the dressing for the turkey, she starts working on the biscuits. She does this every day. She feeds anybody who wants to come to her kitchen to eat. She doesn't make any money at it, and she doesn't care.
When you were a young woman, did you have any idea that someday you'd be doing a thing like this?
Well, you know, I always wanted to be be a person that lived by the side of the road, be a friend to man. I have always wanted that. I've never wanted a big, fine home. I'm just satisfied like I am. I know you have probably a big, fine home. I don't want your big, fine home. I'm glad you got it. And I can enjoy it and just be happy that you have it. But me, I'm fine. Got what I want. I always get everything I want, but I know what to want.
She's done all this cooking every day, 5 days a week, for 15 years, all by herself. This one day, what with us getting in the way and all, she fell behind.
I believe you better stir my rice over there. I don't have time. See, I've got time for you now. Does it need water?
I don't think so, Miss Burgess.
Okay.
Isn't this too much for one person to do, really?
That's why I'm asking you to do it.
It is not often in this world that you meet a person who could be called saintly. The word, however, fairly describes Agatha Burgess. She has assigned herself the daily duty of having Meals on Wheels prepared by 11 a.m. for 15 local shut-ins, people she doesn't even know. They pay, if they can afford it, $2 a meal. You'll have to decide for yourself whether they get their money's worth.
This is a peach cobbler.
Oh, it looks delicious.
I believe I'm giving this one turkey. And this is the rice. And this is the corn.
It's fresh corn, huh?
Mm-hmm. And then the beans. And the gravy dressing. Now, corn muffin and the biscuit.
Okay. For $2, huh?
Volunteers come around to her house to put the Meals on Wheels and see that they are distributed out into the community. All that happens by 11 o'clock in the morning, but Agatha Burgess's day is just beginning. By noon, cars and trucks start pulling up outside her house by the side of the road, and people come in, all sorts of people. Mill workers and judges and truck drivers and the guy who runs the Ford agency. And they all crowd into Agatha Burgess's kitchen and dining room. She feeds anybody who comes to the door, and she makes them all feel welcome in the warmth of her two small rooms. She encourages them to fill their plates, to go back for seconds if they wish. And for all this, she charges $2.75. She knows that's too much for some people, and those people, she doesn't ask for anything.
I'm not out to make money. I don't have any money, but I'm not making any money.
But why do you keep doing it?
I love it. This guy asked me the other day, he said, Miss Burgess, why don't you stop and rest? I said, what would I have to live for? Nothing to live for. Because those people coming every day, they mean so much to me. I fall in love with people.
When the meal is over, when the last crumb of peach cobbler is finished, the guests put their money in a box on the side table, paying their own bills and making their own change. Isn't she afraid that people will steal from the box?
My sister told me, said, one day you're going to be sorry. Somebody's going to rip you off. I said, no. God's always took care of me. And I want to tell you one thing. If they fall that little box, he's going to take care of them. And he will. He'll get them.
She's been up since 5 o'clock. She's been doing this for 15 years. She is 80 years old. When she finishes doing the dishes, she'll start her baking for tomorrow. She won't get out of the kitchen until 10 o'clock tonight. She can't imagine living her life otherwise. It all depends on what you want. What she always wanted was to live in a house by the side of the road and be a friend to man. Here in the Great Plains, anybody who puts his mailbox on a plain post must be considered unimaginative by his neighbors. From Ohio right out to western Kansas, the plow that broke the plains now holds somebody's mailbox up. In less than 1 minute, I can show you some of the mailbox posts we saw in a drive of less than 100 miles across Nebraska. A pump, an auger, a welded chain, a milk can, and another, a double ox yoke, a wagon wheel, a cream separator, spirals of wood block, three big insulators, a heavy spring, and pipe, horseshoes, and wire fence in a pleasing arrangement. I know, you're thinking why we have gaudier mailbox posts than that right here in our county. If so, send me a picture and we'll put it on later in the summer. But it has to be as good as the Nielsen's of Route 1, Box 237A, a windmill studded with reflectors with a goose in flight atop the box. You may send the mailbox pictures to On the Road, CBS News, 524 West 57th Street, New York, New York, 10019. Well, we're going to look for a place to spend the night now. Stay tuned for Bill Moyers, and next Tuesday night, come with us for another little ride in the country.